Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It's my pleasure to welcome Brandon Wheel back to the podcast. Welcome back, Brandon.
Thanks, James. I appreciate you having me back on again. I must be doing something right, I guess, at this point. So,
Absolutely. Now, Brandon, you are the operations director at Iridicio. You know, you're heavily involved with SMRP. You're the co-chair at the conference this year, and next year you're actually going to be the chair. So that's interesting. We'll see how that turns out. No pressure.
Yeah, right. No pressure at all. We've got a great team. SMRP organization is fantastic. I love being a part of it and working with them. So I'm very excited to take on that responsibility next year.
All right. Excellent. Now, prior to Iridicio, you spent a variety of time, you know, training, consulting across various industries. Prior to that, you were in the U.S. Nuclear Navy. What else about yourself did I miss?
From a work standpoint, that's pretty much it. I mean, started in the Navy, and then, nuclear power program is highly regarded for its ability to train folks and get them out into the fleet and operate a plant. So that's where I got my start. And then from there, did implementations, have done training, have done all the above, all over the world. So.
All right, excellent. So we're going to pull on that experience today to ask to answer a listener question. So I got a question from one of our listeners. And I'm in a middle management position. How do I influence change from this middle management position where I'm trying to drive improvements to maintenance, reliability, those sorts of things? So we're going to try and answer this, but I don't think we can just answer it with one question. So let's start. Let's start at the beginning. How often does the drive to improve reliability come from that middle management spot? Is it often, or is it most often pushed down from the top? Now, how often does this occur?
Yeah, it happens, I'd say, a fair amount. And the reason why is we usually get, kind of that middle management level that gets involved with, organizations like SMRP or other conferences, and they get this additional exposure to a peer network. They get exposure to, new information. And they're a lot of times they're the ones that are going to the conference. You're not seeing really upper management heading to the, or even plant managers or operations managers or, corporate leaders. Sometimes you see the corporate leaders at the conferences, but we'd like to get more of them to those things for this very reason, because now you've got enlightened folks that see a better way and they're sitting in that middle management position and they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, which I'm sure we're going to talk about shortly. the additional challenges that comes with being in that, that middle spot and not really being able to make anybody happy.
Yeah. All right. So quite often we get these maintenance managers, reliability managers that want to drive these improvements. They're learning about new ways to improve, but they're stuck in that middle spot, right? So that happens quite often. Now, what are some of the unique challenges that these people experience when trying to drive from the middle management position?
I'm just going to say you're in charge of everything and nothing at the same time, I think is that the challenges that I see is, you've got some level of authority at this point, right? Actual authority and maybe a little bit of purchasing power. To get some things done, you got some folks that maybe report directly to you, but it's more than likely a small percentage of the overall plant population, right? You've got your group, your reliability group, or your PDM group, or your engineering group, or maybe you're like a superintendent, and so you've got maybe a couple of maintenance supervisors and craftsmen that work for you, but you don't have a huge population. So if you're trying to drive change and drive education with your folks, that's fairly easy because you got a small group, but you're just, you know, one drop in the sea of the beast, right? Then you've got the folks above you. You've got zero ability to influence, or excuse me, to like demand change from them. So you really have to turn to influence, and that is a slow and painful process.
All right, so they have their small core group that they're responsible for. They have some authority over them. They can start to drive change there. But the group above them, they have zero authority on. And to make those improvements through influence and to get people to see a different way of doing things, that influence takes a tremendous amount of time. It's not something we can just say, oh, I'm going to influence today and change is going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, is absolutely correct.
You know, I think one of the other unique challenges that I think this position gets put in sometimes, on top of what we just talked about, they're also responsible for making sure that the equipment is running on a day-to-day basis. They're responding to emergencies. They're trying to plan for the upcoming shutdown or make sure things are coordinated for that shutdown and so on and so forth. It's not like they have time to just sit there and strategize. At least in most of the organizations I work with, they don't.
No, they're living in... You know, they've got one foot in today and one foot in tomorrow, and to try to manage that is difficult, right? Like you said, the firefighting, hey, we got 4,002 meetings that you need to go to this week, really doesn't leave a lot of time to spend, you know, in that small group or one-on-one setting where you are working on influencing people, right? If you think that sending an email out is going to get it done, like, hey, here's a really good idea that I had, right? That's going into the pile of the 800 million emails that they've already got to read. And that's probably going to get deleted or put in the save for never pile, right? So so it really has to be done through almost like close personal contact, right? Through a one-on-one meeting or opportunities to coach and mentor and discuss these things. And that, if you're firefighting, it doesn't leave a lot of time for that.
No, and I think one of the things that, you know, we'll probably talk about this a little bit more later, but I think one of the things that they have to do when they're trying to drive these improvements is calendar block. Take half hour a day, block your calendar so you can think about how you're going to present this, build the business case, build the communications or talking points or whatever you got to do, but take that half hour a day to be proactive in trying to figure out what you need to do to drive that improvement from a, you know, going up towards an influence, going down through change management. But you got to set aside that little bit of time every day or else this will never get done.
Yeah, I love that recommendation that, you know, some of our students that are working on various programs we make that same recommendation of, you know, schedule a meeting for yourself and schedule it, you know, attendee of one, right? Like show that you're busy so that people can't schedule over it and make the time, make it a priority. If you allow the chaos of the day to sort of dictate when you're going to get to something that's, you know, that proactive mindset or that influencing or, you know, whatever it is that you need to do, you're just not going to be able to get to it.
Exactly. Now, you know, when they're in that middle management position, we talked about influencing up. Now, how do they really do that? You know, you mentioned, you know, personal conversation, those sorts of things. But, you know, us maintenance guys, we speak in technical terms. We're not very good at marketing and sales. So what can we do differently to influence up?
Yeah, there's a couple of different mental models, if you would call them that. One is the paradigm, right? So, you know, you've got this pre-existing lens that folks are viewing the world through, and it's made up of a couple of different pieces. It's a great book. I'll mention it at the end. We talk about resources, but you know, the one thing of somebody's paradigm that you actually can change, and you can't change the past, and you can't change how they were raised, and you can't change their kind of core values, right? Those are all things that are just built into them, but you can change what they know, their knowledge base. So by introducing them to new knowledge, new information, you know, white papers, conference proceedings, articles, blogs, all this stuff that's out there, you can start to chip away at that paradigm. Now, on the flip side, don't expect to hand somebody something that, you know, is 180 degrees out from the way that they currently think and think that they're going to read it and all of a sudden some magic switch is going to flip, right? It's a slow process. We tend to discard information that doesn't fit our paradigm. So your first couple runs at it, you know, it may be like, oh, well, that was an interesting article, but it's all crap, right? Not in, and just be prepared for that to happen and understand that's part of the change process and that you have to manage that and be patient, right? Don't get frustrated the first time you say, look at all this cool stuff. And they throw it in the garbage can. So you're fighting that paradigm, right? That's a big one. And then my other big one is pain points. What's in it for me? If you're not answering the what's in it for me question, then they're not going to be interested in what you have to say. So if it sounds like more work for them, without some sort of benefit that goes with that, then your message just falls on deaf ears.
Yeah. And I think that follows, you know, that ad car model. You know, you got to create the awareness first, you know, start dropping the hints, having those conversations around how this is going to help us, why we need to do this now, that sort of thing. And then talk about those pain points. That's the desire piece, right? What is the benefit for the person in that role? If we're talking to operations directors or VP of operations, they're going to have certain pain points that we're going to talk to them about. Now we go talk to the finance people at the same level. They're going to have different pain points that we need to address. So we got to think about those messages and communicate them properly to the different roles about how this is going to benefit them. You know, if we don't do that, no one's going to pay any attention and you can't impart any knowledge to them.
Right. Yeah. And try to find ways to explain what it is that you're trying to do or what support that you need that isn't a bunch of like technical jargon. Right. So if you walk in there and you're like, oh man, we're going to do some FMEAs. And from that, we're going to build some EMPs. And then we're going to do this and that. And we got PDM coming. Their eyes are going to roll in the back of their head. You just spit a bunch of acronyms at me. What is this? So put it in terms that they're going to understand. And like you said, you know, tailor the message to the audience. I joke that some of this reliability stuff, when you sell it, it's kind of like that 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, right? Where somebody names an actor and then your job is to connect it to Kevin Bacon in like 6 movies or less, right? So you've got to connect the dots. Yeah. Yeah. So-and-so was in this movie with this person who was in this movie with this person who, you know, was in a movie with Kevin Bacon, right? So you've got to do that from a reliability standpoint. You've got to help them connect the dots between the activities, the resources that are needed, and the what's in it for me, right? How is this going to roll up to influence the metrics or the pain points that they're looking at?
All right, excellent. So we got to speak to their specific pain points. We got to influence up. It's going to take some time. Now, what about those on the shop floor? You know, we're in this middle position. We're influencing up. We've got to get that going. But we also got to get people down on the shop floor moving. How do we do that?
Fire them all and start over. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that. It's very similar, right? Even somebody that maybe works for you directly, you know, you can choose, I guess, the carrot or the stick method, right? And some of it is appropriate depending on the situation. But to take a population of folks and roll a change out, even if they all work for you, you can't expect that everyone is going to fall in line immediately. There's definitely a bell curve. You know, you'll see if you look at the product lifecycle curve or market adoption curve for a new product, it follows a very similar trend with people. You've got your innovators and your early adopters, the folks that see the benefit, that like change, that want to jump on board, and they're going to be your easiest sell. And then you've got on the other side of that curve, the laggards and the slow to change, and you're just flat out resistors, and they're going to be painful, right? You're going to have to manage them. And then there's that middle population. Those are the folks that you really have to spend most of your time and effort following up with, coaching, making sure they understand the expectation, communicating the benefit of the change. Because your fence sitters, that's where, you know, that's where most of the people are going to sit. Like, well, we've seen this before, and you know, it's come and gone. Flavor of the month. We'll just wait out this change, right? We'll wait to see what other people are doing. Those are the kind of comments you can expect from them. So when you're dealing with a population of folks, they're going to follow that curve.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
All right. So, you know, using similar sort of methodology though, right? We have to create some awareness, talk to those pain points, then start to educate them, give them the ability to go implement some of this stuff too, right? Yeah. It's not like we can just say, all right, here's what we're going to do, but you guys can't try anything right now.
Right. Following that ADKAR model, there's the, you know, knowledge, skills, and abilities that have to go with it. So if you tell them, like, let's say you've got a couple of planners and they're not really planning, but you want them to start creating job plans and you want them to start managing the bill of materials. You don't just want them to be a parts gopher and a, you know, second supervisor, basically. Well, that's great. And, you know, maybe you sell them on this idea that it's going to be proactive and things are going to be better. And hey, you know, you don't like getting drug into this stuff when you're trying to get ready for this outage. Great. All good stuff. But what if they've never actually written a job plan before? Well, now there's going to be some fear and some angst because, whoa, he's asking me or she's asking me to do something I've never really done before. And I don't have any training and no practice and coaching at this point. So that can create, you know, it can backfire on you a little bit and create some fear.
Absolutely. Now, it sounds like a lot of what we're doing here in this middle management position is really communication.
Yeah.
Is that what we're primarily doing? It's just communicating and, you know, marketing and influencing and that sort of stuff?
Yes. If you're going to pick one tool, right, make your communication tool the one that you're really good at. I mean, if it's nice to have the technical know-how and it's nice to have the financial background and understand finances and it's nice to have, you know, those other things. But I mean, if there's one universal tool, the old, like, hey, when, you know, all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, communication is kind of the multi-tool of of everything, right? It really does do quite a bit for you. So being a good communicator, following up, checking for understanding, and using that communication skill to influence people is a universal, powerful tool.
All right, excellent. So they got to have that communication in place. You know, it's absolutely vital to manage both or influence up, manage down. What about project planning? How important is that in this process? Do those middle managers need to have a plan that shows milestones, deliverables, those sorts of things?
If you're going to be serious about it, yes. If you're okay with, you know, very slow incremental change, and you're really just leaning 100% on the influence side, you can get there. But it's going to be a little bit more work for you. Whereas if you've got a project plan, if you've got those milestones, if you've got resources assigned and everybody knows the path forward, that's going to take a lot of that heat off of you because you can then point back to that project plan, right? And it honestly shouldn't even just be the middle manager who's driving this thing. It should be there should be buy-in from the other folks as well, and even owners of parts of the plan, right? So it's like, okay, you've got the PDM part. You're going to stand up this part of our department, right? So here's your section. Let's go through it and build out your Gantt chart, build out your milestones, build out who's going to do what and what has to happen first, second, third, so to create some ownership in that plan so that it's not just the that middle manager. I think we talked about this a little bit in that whole, if you're a project manager leading one of these reliability podcasts that we did, but the same stuff applies.
All right. Excellent. So what I'm hearing here from an action standpoint for the person in the middle management position is we got to start with the communication. We got to build the business case, influence up, once we get some support for after that influencing up, then we go ahead, we build a detailed project plan. We make sure people above us are good with that. And then we can start cascading that out and manage it like we would a regular project.
Yep. Yeah. And be okay with the fact that your project plan is probably going to change and morph and grow as you learn more, right? So you may create this timeline and then you've got a certain number of tasks under each major header. And then you all of a sudden you're like, whoa, we need this. And we didn't think about this, right? So add those to your project plan. Let it be a living, breathing document.
All right. So then it's almost, let's start influencing, build a preliminary plan, high level. That way we can communicate that around. Once we start getting some support for that, then we can invest more time to get down to the resource level while continuing to communicate and build support. And then we manage it like we normally would once we finally get full support.
Yep. Identify those KPIs for your project. Whether they're existing KPIs that those high-level folks are interested in or some new ones that you have to, temporarily monitor. Because yeah, you got to be showing the progress, not just from a task level, right? Like, oh, we're 100% complete with putting this document in place, but you really need what are the trends for these these KPIs that we're watching?
All right, so we need those KPIs as well, whether they're long-term KPIs or those temporary ones that we're using just to make sure something's being adopted or being completed on time. What else can a middle manager do to influence change in either direction?
I mean, I think we pretty much hit it, but it's that, what's in it for me and showing them how what you're working on is going to make that better, right? I think sometimes too, as you're on the journey, pointing people towards the past and saying, look how far we've come, can be a big one too, because sometimes you don't realize, where you've come from. Right. And actually we had a client that we were just talking about this with, and they're like, yeah, we got a long way to go, but man, when we look back at how much of a hot mess we were, it's amazing to see how far we've come in a relatively short period of time. So even just some of that perspective of looking in the rear, which is why you should be tracking some of those KPIs. Start the baseline now when you begin your change journey so that you can look back and say, wow, look how far we've come, right? We're not done yet, but man, we got more work to do.
Yeah. And I think that goes to celebrating quick wins, successes, yeah. Right? We set up those short-term goals, celebrate those successes so people stay engaged. Yep. If you have one target that's 4 or 5 years out, and you don't celebrate anything until you get there, people aren't going to stick around for that, right?
Yeah, it's a slow burn. Yeah, it's too much distance between the actions I'm taking now and the results, right? For people to want to keep engaged. That's a good point.
Yeah, the one other thing that I found that helped with us, and not everyone has the option to do this, but in a past life, we had a bunch of plants all over North America. If someone was doing something really good, it wasn't uncommon to take a field trip there to see what they were doing, how it was working, how it was influencing that operation. And it wasn't just for maintenance people. Sometimes it was operators. Sometimes it was operations directors and so on and so forth that could go see how this was working somewhere else. So it painted a better picture than we ever could by trying to explain it to them.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Yeah, like doing some internal benchmarking, holding
exactly
up folks that are that are doing things well and seeing the benefit. Yeah, no, that's one thing I've started relying on more, is putting clients that are not, competitors, right, in touch with each other. And I found it to be insanely powerful, right? Because it's, well, you know, we've talked about it. I'm teaching you, I'm coaching you, you know, but you want to go see it, or you want to go hear it from somebody that just did it, right? And that makes it seems to make a big difference.
Absolutely. Now, what would you tell those individuals that are looking to influence and drive these changes? What is the thing that you would tell them when they're just starting out?
Patience is key. I kind of already mentioned that earlier, but just realizing that folks are not going to change their minds immediately, that sometimes it can be a slow burn. And then hone your communication skills. You know, an email and a meeting is not enough. You know, you got to, like a group meeting, you know, set aside time to work with these folks one-on-one. And that, I think that's critical. And look for opportunities to solicit feedback, right? And that's part of the communication process. Is a really good communication process, you're getting some feedback on the back end of that. So it's, you know, asking them to share their perspective and some of the Stephen Covey 7 Habits of Highly Effective People type behaviors, right, can be very, it'll serve you well when you're trying to influence other folks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, communication is often underappreciated, undervalued in what we do, but it's so important to everything we're trying to do. So working on your communication skills, modeling the behaviors you want, those sorts of things are very, very important.
Yeah. To do it the right way is less efficient than I think we'd all prefer. And it takes time. So carving out that time to communicate effectively is critical.
Yeah. But if we don't take the time and carve it out to do that, what happens is we end up having to redo this stuff over and over and over and not never get results. Yep. Right. So we're trying to go faster, but in reality, it actually stops us or slows us completely.
You're going to be back. Right.
Yep. So what is the one thing you think makes the biggest difference from a middle management position in driving change? Is it communication? Is it a project plan? Is it getting those first followers? What is it?
Yeah, I'd say the communication and the first followers. Because with being an effective communicator, comes some other things like, that guy is well liked, or, boy, that person's just a stand up person. And we want to listen to what they have to say, because when we talk, they listen to us. Right. So there's some, I guess, respect, and that starts to come with being a good communicator, you know, with being a good, being a good manager or leader, being a good coach, right? Those behaviors will get you a lot of horsepower to get things done.
All right. Excellent. Now, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today? One thing they can go do different tomorrow?
Yeah. Active listening, right? When folks, so if you're engaged in a conversation and you're trying to coach somebody and show them a different way, or trying to explain where the different, you know, where we're going with this thing, and they start pushing back, don't just push harder. That doesn't just mean, you know, well, feed them more information. It means probably stop, back up, and let them vent, let them, share their frustrations, their perspective. You know, really listen, really listen. And then when you feel like, boy, they're done, they're spent with their rage or, you know, whatever it is, issues from the past, then you can really start to influence them, because they're more likely to listen at that point, since they feel listened to. That's where you can start to connect the direction and the things that you're trying to do with their pain points that they just expressed.
All right. Absolutely. You need that active listening to identify those pain points that they're venting against, so you can, you know, build that desire within them. All right. Excellent. Now, Brandon, we've talked a lot about how do we drive change, influence change from a middle management position. What are your favorite resources on this topic to help people out with?
Yeah, I mentioned the Paradigms book. by, I think it's Joel Barker. There's obviously Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People is a great resource. Another one would be the sixth discipline, seventh discipline. Let me look that up. Yeah, it's the sixth discipline. No, you're gonna have to edit that. It's garbage. No, it is sixth discipline.
All right, excellent. So I'll make sure to link to those in the show notes. That way people can easily click on them, access them. But there's some great resources there. You also mentioned, the podcast we did on Project Manager's Guide to Reliability. So we'll make sure to link to that as well.
It's fifth Discipline by Peter Senge is the book. That's a good one about systems thinking and organizational learning.
Excellent. So I will make sure we have the right link in the show notes for that one, that it's the fifth, not the sixth discipline.
Yes.
But before we go, where can people find out more about you? If they have questions, how do they get in touch with you? You know, those sorts of things.
Yep. I'm on, you can always come to our website. It's eruditio.com, E-R-U-D-I-T-I-O. That's the company that I work for. We're also active on, Twitter. I've got a Twitter account. It's @ReliabilityGoat. So I try to be on there at least, if not tweeting out, at least, retweeting things that I think are value added or just keeping up with my various, peers in the industry. Definitely SMRP.org, Society for Maintenance Reliability Professionals. I am, as we mentioned earlier, I'm on the conference committee. I'll be the chair next year. So next year it's in Columbus. We'd love to see everybody come to that. It is, a great way to get more information and network with your peers. Pretty powerful stuff.
All right. Excellent. I heard some great feedback from this year's conference that, the tracks were really hard to choose between, same the workshops, because everything was just so good. So you got a lot to live up to.
Yeah. Thanks. No pressure.
All right. Now with that, Brandon, thank you again for talking to us today about how do we influence change from middle management position. I think it's a very valid topic. I think there's a lot of questions around this because a lot of people are in that middle management position trying to drive these changes. I also hope that we answered the listener's question that he had. And if others have questions, I highly encourage you to reach out to myself, Brandon, any one of the guests on the podcast and ask your questions, and we'll do our best to get someone on here to answer them for you.
Yeah.
Now with that, Brandon, thank you and have a great day.
Oh yeah. And I was just going to say with that, if you've got specific things that you'd like to talk to myself or James about, reach out. I know we generalized a little bit because we only really have, 20 minutes, half hour, but, there's specific instances of, hey, these are the folks that I've got issues with. And here's kind of, my unique challenges. I'm more than happy to talk to folks about those.
All right. Excellent. Then I will put your email address in the show notes so they can get in touch with you.
That'd be great.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you, Brandon.
All right. Thanks.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.eruditio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.